Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago Sports Talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie. Tony La Russa, somebody they're going to talk to. A.J. Hinch is somebody that's been rumored to be next on the list.
The one thing that Ben Ryder said that I really agreed with is that I think this is more an asterisk next to his name. I don't think it's going to define him as a manager. And there's a part of me that believes that he might be a better manager as a result of this happening. In other words, he might have an edge to him, something to prove that you wouldn't normally expect from a guy that kind of understand success. He needs to justify himself in a way that could benefit the team that ends up hiring him.
Perhaps, and then perhaps that might be wishful thinking as well, because the only way that the Astros experience is not going to define A.J. Hinch's career is if he wins a World Series with his next team. And if he wins a World Series with the White Sox, you're exactly right then. But if he doesn't, then A.J. Hinch, comma, the manager of the Houston Astros during the sign-stealing scandal, comma, retired today at the age of whatever. You know what I mean? That's going to define his career until he does something greater than that.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Okay, let's go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Stuff's getting real, David.
Morning, Mully. Yeah, it's Thursday. And we're still talking about Tony La Russa, and we're still looking at all of the possibilities because, yeah, that story was real. I don't think that we doubted that. There was a big headline. It was a national report. And Tony La Russa and the White Sox, flirtation, mutual interest, however you want to describe it, it does appear to be something that both sides are going to explore.
Yeah, it is really I don't know how to take it, and I'm trying, you know, it's funny because I said to Kevin, like, wow, this really happening, and he's like, I still don't buy it. And I thought, okay, because I've been trying to talk myself into it now. I've been trying. I went back yesterday, David, and I was trying to find one of the articles I remember reading a while ago, and it was on 528, I think it was 6 years ago, and it was basically this analysis of managers. And I remember reading this story, and it I think we've talked about this before. According to sabermetricians, and boy, they really matter, it's a +2, -2 difference between any manager that you hire, that you can go from -2 wins to really the top is kind of +2 wins. When you start talking about, you know, the war for a manager, right, it's +2, -2. So that isn't kind of the jump that you anticipated to be. But they list in there six managers since 1985 that make their team better, that legitimately kind of jump the number. And one of them is Bobby Cox, which doesn't surprise anybody given the way Atlanta did all those years. Another one is Tony La Russa out of these six managers. So now again, that's 4 years ago, and that's looking from, you know, 1985 to 20 whatever year it was. So it's not talking about today. It's not talking about what's going on right now.
Well, that's
now.
It.
And that's
what, yeah, that, yeah. You know, Mully, there are only two managers in Major League Baseball who have ever won more games than Tony La Russa.
Right.
It's not ever going to be a matter of credentials. It's going to always be a matter of timing. He is baseball Belichick. I mean, he is the guy that you look at his record and you look at his method and you see all the ways that, you know, he changed the game, and he's in the Hall of Fame for a very good reason. And going back to how, you know, he structured bullpens and all the things that happened along the way, you know, this guy dates back in White Sox history to Bill Veeck. Think about that for a moment. So it's more about timing than it is anything. I think we understand that. And, you know, yesterday a lot of things happened. You know, we heard the permission was granted by the Angels to the White Sox. It was more than just Bob Nightingale reporting this. It started to gain some steam nationally. Last night, The Athletic reported that the White Sox sources said that it will be – he'll be one of, you know, several people interviewed. So – we're starting to see some things trickle out, but yeah, Tony La Russa is a real possibility on the South Side.
And I mean, you know, Connie Mack managed till he was like, what, 87, 92 or something? It's
87. Absurd. It was 1950. Though.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to finish the thought. And the reason he got to keep going is he owned the team, right? So in a way, isn't this the same thing? In a way, Tony La Russa would be brought back and could manage at age 76 because of his relationship with the chairman. Because, you know, the chairman, you know, Tony La Russa didn't tell a lot of people when he was retiring, but Jerry knew, and Jerry was at the game, the last game. They are good friends, and they have stayed in touch, and they are like-minded in a lot of the things they do. And you could argue that this does represent sort of a Connie Mack, where you can be the manager as long as you want to if you're also the owner. Well, if you're best friends with the owner or you know, best buds, then I guess you can manage regardless of what your age is.
It sure helps. You're right, and it goes back to it's kind of just Reinsdorf being an extension of La Russa, so maybe he could go as long as he wanted. You know, when La Russa bought the team in 1981, Mully, I think it was, $19 million. Tony La Russa was the manager already, and there was the expectation, and I don't remember, you know, 1981, the White Sox politics, but I think what you read is that there was an expectation that they would start anew, they would start over, and, you know, change managers and this and that. And he kept Tony La Russa, and it paid off in 1983, and I think La Russa's always been, you know, thankful and grateful for that, and that friendship and that bond was created. So that is what's driving this. There's no question about it. The question then becomes, where is Rick Hahn in all of this? And do you have a general manager that sort of is rendered ineffectual if not, you know, irrelevant, if you don't have a voice in this search? And if the strongest voice is your chairman, whether or not, you know, he owns a team, yeah, but is this the best thing for the White Sox future or their present? I don't know if you're going to get a consensus that the answer is yes there.
Maybe they're going to bring back Hahn in 25 years when he's 76 years old. Is that the way they're going to go about this?
Boy, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know that the owner will be the same owner at that point. I'm not sure.
I wouldn't bet against it.
I think we all could probably agree on this. The White Sox need an intervention. You know, they need some sort of, you know, gathering and somebody that can get to Jerry Reinsdorf, because the difficulty in accepting this, and I think, you know, Kevin reflects that. You hear talk to other Sox fans, I'm sure, Mully, you're like, they don't think this is a good idea or possible. Who's going to talk them out of it?
Well, I asked you that question yesterday when we were chatting. Is there an equivalent to the 25th Amendment for a chairman? And it was a joke, but it wasn't a joke. I mean,
what time is Jerry Reinsdorf's town hall meeting tonight?
Exactly. Listen, Jerry is the chairman, and Jerry owns a percentage of the team, but he doesn't own the majority of the team, right? There are other owners involved, and he represents them. I wonder if they could get together and talk to him. Hey, what are you doing? Or if he has an argument strong enough that would defend hiring Tony La Russa. And I think that it's a fascinating subject because of exactly the reason you said, David. I think that you look at it and you don't think, wow, you know, Rick Hahn is really thinking outside the box. You think, here's a candidate being thrust upon Rick Hahn. And you know, because of the relationship with the owner, and no other team would be angling to hire a 76-year-old manager. Now, you know, we got to get into all this stuff. Is it ageism to say that because he's 76, he couldn't manage the team? I don't think so. I think that it's the fact that he's been out of baseball for the length of time he has. And I know he's been a consultant and he's a lifer and he's around the game, but there have been a lot of changes to the game. And the way that people operate has changed fairly significantly. And I think that that's kind of what is giving everyone great pause. It doesn't matter what kind of pioneer you were as a young man. If the thinking in the game has shifted and changed to a point where your thinking could be out of date. The norm. I don't want to say out of date. Well, that's exactly where I was going because of the idea of ageism.
But you know what? It's not necessarily ageism, Molly. It's practical thinking and application here, because you are right in that it would be 10 years between Tony La Russa's last game that he managed and his next one. And I think there's a lot that's happened in that decade. So there's that concern about, you know, catching up to what baseball is today and what it was in 2011. So the other thing is that, you know, I think you could sell, if you're the White Sox, you're trying to look at this, and I'm sure that they have, you know, there's some people in place that would help you maybe, you know, execute this plan. Joe McEwing is a guy that is valued by the organization, right? And he is a guy that is La Russa's guy. He played for Tony La Russa. He interviewed for his job when he left. He's a guy that you could see being part of whatever scenario, whatever plan that they try to execute and sell to the fan base. If you bring in Tony La Russa, maybe Joe McEwing stays. Maybe that's part of a succession plan. I don't know. I'm thinking out loud because this is all very unusual. But there are, you know, practical considerations that you cannot forget, and it's okay to discuss them because they're real. You know, it's not necessarily saying he can't handle the job. It's just like he's going to have to adapt like anybody out of the game for a decade.
Yeah, and here's the deal. It's like an exceptionally weird hire if they make it. And so we're going to have to pretend it's normal and try to talk about it in a rational way, because it could happen. But it would definitely be so far kind of out of touch, if you will, out of the reach of most minds, that we'd have to kind of talk about it rationally. And boy, I mean, somebody said, can you imagine if Tony La Russa was, you know, doing news conferences? And we'll talk to Bernie Miklas later in the program, and Tony could get a little cranky. I wonder what he's like now. Would he just come out and scream, get off my lawn?
Well, that's a good question. It really is, because that's a big part of the job today. Looking forward to hearing from Bernie. Looking forward to hearing from Hawk. Hawk Harrelson joins us at 8:20 because he's the guy that, going back, fired Tony La Russa famously in 1986. And well, you know what I think overall, and we'll continue to discuss this, and you're exactly right. There's going to be a time, there could come a time when this is reality, and we're going to have to we're going to talk about it in a way that's different than just like, what the heck happened here?
Right.
And so what's disappointing right now, though, the White Sox had a really good season. The White Sox have a terrific roster. The momentum was positive when they even losing the playoff series as they did, right? It was devastating. It was disappointing. It was all those things. But then you took a step back. You're like, wow, this team is headed places. There's a reason to be upbeat. This is really hard for people to, I think, to kind of like look at, like, where is this going? You're still positive, but it's like, who's running the show here? What happened? What happened to all these positive thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, look, like I said, we're gonna forge forward, and we're gonna talk about it and try to explain it and try to keep an open mind about it while understanding that there was a shock factor where everyone was just scratching their head, and I think that element of it, as you say, kind of still remains because it is so far outside the norm. It's difficult to comprehend, but. Yeah, I mean, if it happens, it happens. So we better start steeling ourselves and getting our resolve in place. All right, tons of news with the Bears. Juan Castillo, the offensive line coach, will be away from the facility and any kind of in-person contact with the team through Sunday. This is going on around the league. With Juan Castillo, he was in close contact with someone away from the team that tested positive, but he is considered high risk, so he will be away from the organization this week as they prepare for the Panthers. And the Panthers have entered the NFL's intensive protocols after being exposed to a COVID-19 positive player when they played the Falcons last Sunday. So they haven't had anyone test positive, but they are trying to keep an eye on that.
You heard the anguish in Matt Nagy's voice when he talked about just everything that these teams are going through on a daily basis to kind of adhere to these protocols, and you don't want to take that for granted, and certainly this is going to be a tough week on the Bears offensive line without Juan Castillo and on the field without James Daniels. So they're going to have they have plenty to rally around as they head down to Carolina.
Baseball news, college football news. We'll get into the White Sox news, and we'll start all that conversation in the Pick Six next. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What do you make of Tony La Russa now a legitimate candidate for the White Sox, with word that the Angels have been asked and been given permission to interview him? Is it a form of ageism to dismiss him because he's 76 years old?
I suppose it is a form of ageism, but I don't think it's. I don't think we're dismissing him because he's 76. I think it's the length of time that he has between managerial jobs. If it comes down to it, if he ends up being the guy. I think it's a lot different now that he's a legitimate candidate, because I think that people can't keep trying to punch holes into the story, and people can't keep second guessing whether or not the report was true, and whether he owes one to a guy or he's getting his name out there. Bob Nightingale got kind of ripped apart by some people here on The Score, and I think, David, we both understood that he wasn't going to write that unless there was a level of truth to it. And kudos to Bob, because he got it right.
You don't go that far out on a limb for a favor, or if you're not sure about a source or the validity of a story. So there was never any doubt from our perspective that Bob Nightingale was onto something here because of his past in reporting on White Sox information as well. So now that he has had some other outlets confirm that and forward that, yeah, I think that it's a real possibility. And as far as you have to be very careful not to underestimate anybody because of their age. I don't think that there's a suggestion that Tony La Russa can't manage a Major League Baseball team at 76 years old in 2021. I just think that we're expressing the concerns of anybody that comes back after 10 years away from the dugout. How effective? How has the game changed? How willing and able is he going to be to adapt? It also seems incompatible with a young team on the rise to insert a veteran manager who's been away from the game for 10 years into that setting. So those are the things that I think are valid concerns.
Pick Six!
If the White Sox do hire La Russa, would they have been better off keeping Rick Renteria? And would you prefer yesterday's hero, Tony, to the most recent GOAT with a small G?
I like this question. It's really interesting because, boy, I think you could make that argument, Mully. I think every organization there's momentum that is created by seasons like the White Sox just enjoyed. And this is sort of an interruption of that momentum. It just is. And I think that you could justify a lot of things about hiring Tony La Russa if you're Jerry Reinsdorf, but they're hard to see right now. And what would be easier to almost get excited about, okay, if you didn't like the way Ricky Renteria handled the bullpen, hire a modern pitching coach. Insert him next to Ricky Renteria and get more involved. We read from Darryl Venskowin there was some friction that built at the end of last season or maybe throughout the year in the 60-game schedule. Okay, fix that. You could have handled this in a different way rather than just launching him. I think it's a really interesting idea to wonder if they could have just embraced what they had, tried to continue this momentum and move forward. They want to manage the bullpen better. Well, they're going to go out and they're going to talk to the guy that basically helped invent the bullpen, the roles in the bullpen, and Tony La Russa. It's like hiring Bill Gates as your IT guy. I mean, you get the guy who understands every aspect of the bullpen. So is it an overreaction? Maybe. But I think this is a question we'll continue to explore.
I really like that analogy. That is beautiful, David. Look, I think if you hire La Russa, it's so weird that it's legitimate to ask if you would have been better off keeping Rick Renteria. And I don't know a Sox fan that didn't think they made the right decision by moving on from Rick Renteria. And that is a cruel comment to Rick and what he accomplished. But it's almost like he's the guy to get you through the rebuild, and now you need a guy to press all the right buttons. And I think there was this feeling that they were going after, you know, think about what Rick Hahn said about somebody that that had a lot of success recently in October. And I think that made everyone believe that A.J. Hinch was going to be the guy. And, you know, you could get on board with him being a better manager than Rick Renteria. When it comes to Tony La Russa, there's no question he's had a significantly better career. But that it's such an oddity that I think you legitimately can ask, like, how will the players handle this? What will the players, you know, will they improve? Will the arrow continue to point up? And will Tony be able to kind of pick apart different moves that need to be made in the moment? I think these are all legitimate questions and ones that we're going to be asking and looking at if indeed this ends up happening. And it's a pity, really, because I think we thought there was great ambition, not the idea of hiring a Hall of Famer, but getting someone that that might be still putting up his credentials in that place. So I think it's a legitimate question. We'll be discussing it and looking at it, picking it apart, if indeed this ends up happening.
Pick six! Wow!
How do you feel about reports the White Sox are concerned about the possibility once presumptive managerial favorite A.J. Hinch could be harmed by more information breaking on the Astros cheating scandal? Why isn't La Russa's connection to steroid cheats an issue, and which is worse?
Boy, this is good, too, because I think that when we look at A.J. Hinch and we talk about, you know, the fact that the league has got a suspension on him, it ends after the World Series, so you can jump in and hire him, and he's going to be available to all teams, and he is a hot candidate. And then you hear, well, they're a little bit worried that there's still a lot of reporting going on about that cheating scandal, and stuff could come out that would not be very good for him. You know, I think they need to know every element of the story from the guy himself before they make that kind of a hire, if indeed they end up shifting here and going in that direction. But, you know, I guess basically what you're saying is that because the steroid thing was in the shadows, right? Game of Shadows was the book about it. Because it was kind of hidden in a way that the signal calling thing wasn't hidden, that that therefore the manager has, you know, how in the name of God was Tony La Russa supposed to notice that Mark McGwire kept growing? I mean, I don't know how he was supposed to see that. When someone is right in front of you, you don't notice, right? I mean, are you kidding me? That is a very unfair comment. You know, oh, you've put on 70 pounds. Wow. I never saw that coming.
Camera, so, it's 10.
We've kicked all that stuff, you know, under the rug, and we don't deal with that stuff. But I would argue that the systematic steroid cheating that went on in baseball, and again, it was, to me, it was institutional. I think that was worse. But I you know, listen, is somebody gonna be flashing lights on the scoreboard if Tony takes over, or has that been thrown out too?
You know, I don't think there's any much difference. You're exactly right, Molly. You could make that argument about steroids being worse, but here's the difference. We've had that national discussion. We've had that conversation throughout baseball. It's sort of Tony La Russa has survived the test of time, and A.J. Hinch is just entering that arena. And so we haven't heard his explanation. We aren't tired of the conversation or the debate yet. We still have yet to kind of put a period on that that sentence. And that's what I think maybe scares the White Sox. They would never say that. But you talk to some people, and I think that there's a real sense of, well, is it going to get worse before it gets better for A.J. Hinch, for Alex Cora, for the people involved in the Astros scandal as these reports come out, as more people talk? See, this is going to be something that Tony La Russa has already been through, right? He's already had sort of survived the stigma, whereas A.J. Hinch, that part of his career, the post-Astros portion of it, is just beginning, and I think that's a big difference.
Can you believe this?
What do you think of 68-year-old Alabama football coach Nick Saban testing positive for COVID-19? What about the 48-year-old athletic director Greg Byrne also testing positive? And do you think any SEC issues containing COVID will or should give the Big Ten pause?
Well, this is serious stuff when you have the best coach in your game, in your sport, coming down with COVID-19. It should bring it home for a lot of people in the SEC, in the state of Alabama. And if it needs, and if this is necessary for that to happen, then look at Nick Saban. He's going to try to coach this game while in quarantine. If they play the game, I'm not sure. The SEC, they postponed LSU Florida. They've got a couple other games. Vandy, Missouri, that's in doubt. I think that was postponed. This is happening all over college football. There have been 24 games postponed heading into this week. I questioned it when they began. I questioned it as it happened. I questioned the sanity of coaches like Dan Mullen who want 90,000 people in a stadium. It's lunacy. It's dangerous. It's reckless. And if you're the Big Ten, you look like that you were maybe on the right side of this debate when you were pausing, when you were waiting, when you were delaying. And I'm not sure it makes a lot of sense to get back into the stadiums to play football. We don't know yet how much the game itself is spreading this further, because that's been suggested when you saw the Ole Miss and Alabama game after that one, what happened. So if you're Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren, I think you've got to have another conversation, an ongoing conversation about whether or not this makes sense.
You know, it's been fascinating to watch because college football has been, you know, really affected by this, and I think that what's fascinating is everybody is carrying on as if nothing's going on, and now you got, you know, a 68-year-old head coach. First of all, I didn't realize Nick Saban was that young, but you know, you look at what's happening around college football and all the postponements, and you know, Florida, apparently it's run through the team there. My goodness gracious, it's kind of shocking that we're just pretending there's nothing going on. What me worry, Alfred E. Newman, right? It's just, you know, smile your way through it. Whistle a song. Maybe it won't affect you. Yeah, of course the Big Ten should give it another look. Although I saw the standings the other day, and the college football power rankings, and, you know, Clemson's number one at 3-0. Ohio State's number two at 0-0. So it's help.
They looked really good last week.
It's a pick six.
When you heard Nick Foles saying the Bears want to get their offense to the point where every single play will be dangerous, what did you think? Will that happen this year with Foles or ever under Matt Nagy?
Boy, I thought it echoed something Matt Nagy had said, right? Didn't he say that one time, that they wanted to be able to score on every play? And I think that's the goal. That is the idea, that everything you call is just going to be absolutely a play that could score a touchdown on. And that is the goal of the offense. We haven't seen anywhere near that. So having that as a goal versus the reality of creating that, I would say, guys, you know, protect the defense and try to make it a little bit easier on them. I think it's very ambitious. I don't think it's going to happen this year. And I would doubt it's ever going to happen unless the playmakers increase significantly.
I thought that I didn't even see Matt Nagy's lips move when the words came out of Nick Foles' mouth.
That is a pick six!
Did Matt Nagy sound to you like a guy anxious to sign Le'Veon Bell? And how would you describe his enthusiasm or lack thereof?
He put it right where it should be, on the general manager's desk at his feet. It's his responsibility, Ryan Pace, to figure this out. Matt Nagy did not sound like, to me, a guy like was anticipating that this was imminent, despite what the odds makers might think. It sounds like overnight that Le'Veon Bell's picking between five teams. The Chiefs might be the front runner, Dolphins, Bears, Pats. And I think the Chiefs and the Raiders are involved. So I don't think that's probably going to happen. If it does, they'll figure it out. But Matt Nagy did not sound like a guy who expected it to happen.
No, he didn't get on a table for the guy. Let's put it that way. He didn't take a shoe off and start pounding a table for the guy. He just seemed to sit back and let everyone talk about, hey, if the guy ends up at the Chiefs, why wouldn't the Bears want him, right? Aren't we just running the mirror program, the poor man's version,
dangerous every play.
Yeah, exactly. You would be if you had a more dangerous player with you. Yeah, that's great stuff. All right, we're going to hear from Kev Bowe, and then we're going to get to Dave Richard. So if you have a fantasy question, 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. Chicago guy made good. Dave Richard will join us after we hear from Kev Bowe. Rich! Rich!
national fantasy. We cry, hey, pledge, pledge for fantasy.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Dave Richard is a Chicago guy made good. He joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline. Mr. Fantasy Football for CBSSports.com. CBS Sports. Dave, good morning. How are you, pal?
Hey, Dave.
Gentlemen, good morning and welcome to what should be the, I was going to say the make or break week for David Montgomery, but I think it's going to be the make week. We've seen his playing time just go skyrocket into the 80% range. So he's basically on the field almost every play for the Bears offense, but only 10 carries each of the last 2 weeks. What the hell is that, Matt Nagy? That's crazy. Getting the Panthers this week. They just lost KK Short. That's one of their big defensive tackles. They have two other defensive front seven starters hurt right now. I think this is a great spot for the Bears to get him going. And I love what they've been doing with him in the passing game. 10 catches over the last 2 weeks without Tariq Cohen on the field. That's great. Keep that up, but give this man 15 carries. He should be great for fantasy this week. Montgomery should be in all lineups.
Better day on Sunday, Dave, Mike Davis or David Montgomery?
I'm going to go with Davis over Montgomery just because he's been rolling hot right now, and he's been getting the catches and the carries that we wish David Montgomery had been getting, and the Panthers just know how to use him. He looks better than he ever did with the Bears, the Seahawks, any of the other teams that he played with. And, I would imagine that he's more of like a top 5 to 10 fantasy running back, whereas Montgomery is more of a top 12 to 16 type running back.
Dave, it's a fascinating point in the season because I think we're all kind of watching this COVID thing closely in terms of our football. I know that Cam Newton is back, supposedly practicing today with the Patriots. There is no game tonight, however, right? So we normally ask you who you like tonight, but we'll save the question. I'm very curious, how do you incorporate that stuff into what you're doing? I mean, how do you consider, well, this could happen, that could happen, or do you throw that out and just go with the best players you have and don't worry about it?
I mean, we're running out of players, so pretty much everybody has to go with the best players that they have every single week, because not only are our players getting hurt at a rate that no one can really believe, and it feels like it's a higher rate than it's ever been before, because every week it's, you know, like last week it's Dalvin Cook going down, Dak Prescott going down, week before that, Austin Eckler, and the list goes on and on. But I feel like that the buys on top of it make it harder to field like a really good lineup. Like there are people that they might be so desperate, they're turning to Darnell Mooney for fantasy football help. There's no one else out there, and he's a guy who's got speed and plays a lot, and they've got to take a chance, and that's what they have to do. In the case of somebody like Cam Newton, if he proves to be negative from COVID-19, that means he's over it, he's cured, he's ready to get back to work, and he's probably fine. He's probably ready to just go back and do everything that he's done before. This isn't like coming back from a knee injury or, you know, a shoulder or something like that that could impact a quarterback. It was COVID. He was sick. He's better now, thank goodness, and he can get back to work.
All right, Dave, your public awaits. Let's start with Keith out in Rockford. Keith, you're on the Score with Dave Richard. Good morning.
Good morning, fellas. How you doing?
Good.
Good.
I have a situation here. I have Zach Ertz that has not been playing well the last couple of weeks, and Mike Gesicki. So what do you think about that?
What do I think about it? I think I wish you had drafted better tight ends, but really it's more like Zach Ertz has let people down. I would go with Gesicki because Ertz has been getting shut down by single coverage. Tack on that Carson Wentz is constantly moving out of the pocket because his offensive line can't protect him. And now they're playing the Ravens. That's not going to be a good matchup. At least with Gesicki, he's taking on the Jets. Should be at least a decent game for him. With Ertz, I mean, he might give you another game where he doesn't give you more than 2 or 3 fantasy points. That's it. That's terrible. No one should start somebody like that.
What does coaching changes? What do they mean? Well, I guess I'm scratching Le'Veon Bell this week, but and there hasn't been a coaching change yet. But what? How do you take that into account? Yeah, there will be, exactly.
Yeah, it's going to happen, whether Adam Gase likes it or not. Keep your eyes open, Adam. Watch out behind you. It depends on the situation. When a coach who's liked gets fired, I don't think the team really changes that much. But when a coach that isn't liked gets fired, you see what happens in Houston. Okay, so Bill O'Brien wasn't popular with the players. I think that got out there after he was fired. And Romeo Crennel was popular with the players. I think the players seemed a little more motivated. And they were smarter offensively. It's funny how that works, where the offensive-minded coach is gone, and then the new coach who's doing the plays makes it better, makes the whole offense better. And we saw that happen, and I think we're going to continue to see Houston's offense do well. The defense, I'm not so sure about. Now, in Atlanta, I think the players like Dan Quinn. And I know that they like Raheem Morris, who's going to take over. But I don't see that team bouncing back and having a huge game, for example, against Minnesota this week. I think the Vikings will win. I do think it'll be close. But I'm not ready to say, all right, you've got to start Matt Ryan this week. Like, Deshaun Watson was a must start last week. You knew you absolutely had to have him in your lineup. There were no questions about it. But Matt Ryan and company, if he doesn't have Julio Jones, that seems to be the linchpin to the offense. If Julio isn't there, it's hard for anybody in that offense to be great. Although last week we did see Gurley continue to roll against Carolina. That's the team that the Bears are obviously going to run against now, so hopefully that's a good omen. And then Calvin Ridley had a good game. So we'll see what happens. I know with the Jets, I have a feeling that they'll finally win a game once they let go of Adam Gase, but that's just a matter of when they decide to actually go ahead and do that.
Let's go out to Tom in Frankfurt. He has a quarterback question for Dave Richard.
I do ahead, standard. I have a standard PPR league, and I have Deshaun Watson or Ryan Fitzpatrick.
It's Watson, and Fitzpatrick is fun. And I know last week, this is the rule with Ryan Fitzpatrick. This is just the rule. Go start Watson, but when you're thinking about starting Ryan Fitzpatrick, look around, and if you see a lot of like fantasy analysts say, "Oh yeah, you got to start him. This is the week. He's going to be great." Don't do it, because he'll let you down. It happens every time. And then the week after that, when it says, you can't start Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's on the road. He's at San Francisco. There's no way he'll be good. That's when you start Ryan Fitzpatrick. He loves to dominate when no one's counting on him, it seems like. And this is such an easy matchup for him against the Jets. You would think that he'll go out there and crush it. I have a feeling he's going to let fantasy managers down. He might be a good low-end quarterback this week, especially if you're without Russell Wilson. You can go to your waiver wire and pick up Ryan Fitzpatrick. But I like Andy Dalton in Dallas better. I like Ryan Tannehill better. I think those guys are going to be better than Fitzpatrick this week.
Ben Roethlisberger is facing Cleveland. He's at home. We have a couple questions about him. But my question is Chase Claypool. How do you make sure you didn't miss that game? And how do you make sure you're not on a guy that's not going to repeat it?
It's funny. After the game, Chase said, yeah, I thought I was going to have a small role today. And I don't know if he was being tongue-in-cheek or what, but usually the players don't know they're going to score four touchdowns before the game. That's just one of those things where Roethlisberger just kept finding ways to get him the ball. The offense was designed that way. They did lose Deontay Johnson early on in the game, and that may have opened up some playing time for Claypool. And if you go back to week three when they took on the Texans, Deontay Johnson wasn't there either. And that's when Claypool actually played more in that game in Houston than he did last week against Philly. But the Steelers, I mean, they have no choice now. This guy just had four touchdowns. He was absolutely awesome. He's a very tough receiver to match up with because he's 6'4 and 220 pounds. I think that you've got to put him on the field for almost every play at this point, and that's going to help him in fantasy because now he'll start to see more than three or four targets per game, which is what he was getting early on in the year. And now he's got potential to beat defenses deep, and it's going to be really tough for defenses to line up with him, like I said. So I think if you've got Claypool off the waiver wire, you've got someone who can be at least a number three fantasy receiver, but he could develop into their top guy if they so choose. And he's got to be able to hold up his end of the bargain. He can't make mistakes. He's got to hold on to the football, can't body catch, and he's got to be able to come through on all those throws from Roethlisberger. And the one thing that we've seen from the Steelers this year is that they like going with short passes. They're not trying deep passes nearly enough. Roethlisberger's average depth of throw is very low compared to what he usually does. So Roethlisberger does have to get that going. He's a startable fantasy quarterback this week, top 10 guy against the Browns.
Chris in Crown Point, you're on the score with Dave Richard.
Good morning, guys. Good to talk to you all. I got a Dave, I got a running back, Miles Gaskin or Damian Harris?
I'm going to go with Gaskin. And this is that's the one guy on the Dolphins that I feel amazing about going up against the Jets. You've got to figure that the Jets' offense is going to put their defense in bad position. And their defense is probably tired of getting steamrolled week after week. And we saw Gaskin level up last week, right? The Dolphins put Jordan Howard on the inactive list. And so not only did Gaskin get his usual amount of work, he actually got a little bit more than his usual amount. He worked the goal line and he scored a short yardage touchdown that typically Jordan Howard was getting. We've seen in the Dolphins two wins, over 20 touches for Miles Gaskin. I think they're going to win against the Jets. They're basically 10-point favorites against them right now. Gaskin should be in your lineup.
Where are you at with Andy Dalton? What does that change mean? And this, I saw Chandler Jones is out, right? So this could be a spot for him, no?
It is his world right now. Andy Dalton is really like he doesn't want it to be his world, obviously, because it meant that Dak Prescott is, you know, missing the rest of the year and that sucks. But he's taking over an offense that's very creative and they're just loaded with great talent at wide receiver and running back. So it's a great spot for him. He's never quite been with this much talent on offense before, and he's been behind offensive lines that are beat up like this one is right now before. So he should be able to manage that. He's not quite as good of a passer as Dak Prescott. He's a little more inaccurate, and obviously he doesn't move like Dak Prescott does. So I would imagine there will be a slight downgrade for the wide receivers in Dallas, but this matchup against Arizona is good. That secondary hasn't played well, and their best pass rusher, like you said, Chandler Jones, done for the year. So it's going to make it easier for Andy Dalton to complete those passes. I do think he's good enough to start this week. And here's a sentence I never thought I'd say on actual radio. Start Andy Dalton, sit Tom Brady.
Novell, let's wrap it up with you from Olympia Fields. You're on actual radio with Dave Richard.
Thank you for taking my call, and I do agree with you on Ryan Fitzpatrick. When you start him, he's not good, but then you don't start him, and he's fantastic. Yeah. But standard league, I need one. Damian Harris, David Johnson, or James White, I need one.
It's going to be David Johnson. And last week they came real close to getting him 100 yards. Tennessee's defense, despite what we saw on Tuesday, not very good. And I could see David Johnson getting at least 100 total yards. But the way that they leaned on him in this game and the way that they used him, they used outside zone runs, that helped him quite a bit. Doesn't look like he's got the burn that he used to have, but he's still getting volume, and that's good. I would start Johnson.
Great stuff, Dave, as always. Appreciate it. Great to talk to you. God bless.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, guys. Good luck in your leagues this weekend.
That is Chicago Guy Made Good, Dave Richard, and he's got all the information. And hit him up on Twitter, and he will help you out if you didn't get your question answered somehow, David.
I kind of like your preoccupation with Chase Claypool. I think that's kind of cute.
I am not apologizing for having noticed that they needed to take
a certain
tight end out of Notre Dame.
I remember.
I'm not down on I Cole Kmet, God bless him, he's going to be dangerous on every play eventually. But right now, I think if I'm a fantasy owner, definitely Chase Claypool.
Yeah, he's dangerous now. Pretty good.
And so is our guy Brad Biggs. And we'll bring in Biggsy next. Biggs time follows in just a sec.